Good afternoon, listeners. Thank you so much for joining WRUU 107.5 LP Savannah, Georgia, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings Community Radio with Global Soul. I hope everybody is staying safe and being creative. And I don't know about you guys, but, you know, I have some friends that tell me they gained the COVID-15, you know, like the freshman 15. So make sure you're getting out there. Make sure you're walking around. Make sure you're being safe and healthy and all that kind of good stuff. So we're gonna get right into it today. My guest today is Dr. Theo Plofy of Savannah State University. He's a professor there and my esteemed colleague. Dr. Plofy is one of the professors at the university that is using a 3D printing PPE equipment machine. Okay? And we're going to get into this. Everybody, you're asking yourself, what is a 3D machine and why are they making PPE equipment? Well, that's a very good question. And Dr. Theo Plofy is going to be able to answer that for us. Dr. Plofy is with the Department of Journalism and Mass Communications, my team. Yay, woo, go JMC. And like I said, we're very glad to have you here today, Dr. Plofy. You can introduce yourself a lot better than I can, sir. So go ahead and tell our listeners who you are, and then we'll go into our nice little conversation. How's that?
That sounds great. So good afternoon, listeners. My name is Dr. Theo Plofy. I'm a professor here, assistant professor here at the Department of Journalism and Mass Communication here at Savannah State University. And I teach courses on digital media, media production, and media law and theory.
Okay. Awesome. And you sat across the hall from me.
I do sit across the hall from you. I have the opportunity to see your lovely smile every day.
Thank you. So we're going to go into just our little conversation. I got a few questions for you because I'm just so excited about this. So we have some masks that are being made, multiple masks being printed with a 3D with a 3D printer. What is this project?
So, in a cross interdivisional, cross disciplinary effort between the JMC and the visual arts program, we have created what we call a makerspace. And we mean that in a very literal sense. It's a space for people to make things. So, we have a large printer here for posters and things of that nature. We're going to get a laser cutter in here at some point, and then we have our 3D printers. And so I have an extensive background in 3D printing and 3D modeling, and so that's sort of what I'm bringing to the table. And then the visual arts program, led by Professor Nicholas Silberg, is then bringing sort of the visualization, the art, the creativity side to the makerspace. And what we want to foster is an opportunity for students to express themselves in a digital 3D print medium.
Okay, that sounds really cool.
So for my purposes, I believe that most citizens, most students, most people do not realize the labor that goes into the digital media products they consume. They play a video game, they don't get how those coding was done or how the sprites were made. They don't have no clue. They just only see the end product.
Right.
They watch a film and they don't realize when there's an explosion on the set that there's over 400 people involved in that explosion, from the explosionary device people to the special effects people, to the directors, to the actors, to the stuntman. All of those efforts and labors go into making that into something that we consume and accept as real.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want people to realize is that the labor, the code, the digitalness of that is also real. And the greatest expression of that is to take digital code, design something in a 3D CAD design program, a computer-aided drafting program, such as Mixer or Blender or Mesh Mixer and or Tinkercad and make something, a model inside that in a digital sense, and then print that out so that it's tactile, so that you can touch it, so that you can see it, I guess taste it, whatever the other five senses are, mm-hmm. that you can actually see, wow, this that is, digital code is real.
This is so high tech and so cutting edge, especially for Savannah State University. And I something tells me this is really going to put Savannah State on a total different technical map.
Yes, I hope so. And not only that, we're not, but the key difference is that we're not in the engineering program.
Right.
We're not in the architecture program. During my previous stop at Texas A&M before I came here, the 3D makerspace printing lab, and they had a laser cutter. They have all the things that I want to do here, mm-hmm. but they have that housed in their architecture program because students are making models and designing things, and they were using materials such as graphite, mm-hmm. which is an electrical conductor, in order to print some of their items. But we, on the other hand, are trying to think of ways to express that with art, with visual art. And so in that sense, we're a little different. We're not as much in the technical space of engineering, but we are in the technical communication space,
gotcha.
Where communication and technology meet. And that's really important for me to express.
Okay. And so, a Georgia dentist who began the Fired by Corona movement, mm-hmm. is one of the architects of this project. What's a Fired by Corona movement?
So Dr. Mark Cousy, a dentist in Cumming, Georgia, came up with a design mm-hmm. On his 3D printer that works really, really well. And we all call it sort of the Cousy mask. Mm-hmm. And so he said to himself, well, there's got to be a way for other people to join me in making these masks. Mm-hmm. And so they started this movement involving initially dentists, and then along came other people with 3D printers, excuse me, in order to replicate the mask design that he had created. Mm. They tested the mask in a lab. They tested it in their offices. And although it's not FDA certified, it is better than your yarn mask or your cloth mask mm-hmm. or something without a filter.
You know,
they wanted a way to... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. No, go ahead. Go ahead, because I have a question. Go ahead.
They wanted a way for the average person or the person working at a dentist's office or a nurse at a clinic that doesn't have a reliable source of PPE to be able to have a mask that they can use on a daily basis that has a filter.
Mm-hmm.
And the cloth masks are great. I've got a couple, but they don't have the filter. Even if they have the pocket inside, the entire mask, in a sense, is not filtered. So that is a key difference between their production mask and anyone else's. And so we signed up with this, and we joined up with it, and we started making their mask that they had designed.
Wow. And so there's also another professor, Professor Silberg. He's the chair mm-hmm. of the Department of Fine Arts, Humanities, and Wellness, who's on this project with you as well. He couldn't be with us today, but shout out Dr. Silberg.
Yeah, very much so.
So how did this project, I think you kind of went into how the project came to life. How many masks have you guys created so far?
So we've created and donated
mm-hmm.
Over almost 250 masks thus far.
Awesome.
Now,
awesome.
I've got probably another 100 right now that we're waiting to send out as soon as somebody comes along and says they need masks.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to roll back a little bit back to the Fired by Corona movement. We appreciate everything that they've done. But the problem was is they didn't have a distribution model.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a way to send the masks out to people. So it's great. You're making masks. Everybody is producing masks. That's awesome.
Right.
But then I have to have a way to get that into the hands of people.
So
right? I have to have a way for people to get those. Go ahead.
So how can we make that happen? What do we need to do?
So what we have been doing here at Savannah State is we've created a web form, and somebody reaches out to me by email and contacts me or Professor Silberg, and they say, hey, I'm interested in your masks.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will then guide them to a web form that they fill out. They return that to us, and then we send them the masks. And we're doing all of this completely free of charge. We are donating all. We are taking care of the shipping. We are printing the masks and sending them out pro bono. Because, go ahead.
That's amazing. Yeah. So how are these masks clean? Can you just, like, throw them in the washing machine or wipe them down with alcohol?
Yeah, you can put them in a dishwasher. I soak mine
mm-hmm.
in a bleach and OxyClean solution,
mm-hmm.
And I scrub it a little bit on the inside and make sure that all the bugs are out, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then, bang! I replace the filter on the top, and then I reuse it.
Well, this is amazing. So I'm wondering why more universities or more labs are not doing this.
So there is a liability issue, right? That if somebody got sick after using the mask, they could then take legal action against that lab or that place that produced them.
Gotcha.
And so we've come up with in our agreement as a way to indemnify both Professor Silberg and I and the university, because we know that these are not FDA issued. They mm-hmm. are not FDA approved.
Mm-hmm.
They are specifically for the idea that they are better than a cloth mask because they have the filter. And so what we're producing is the shell, which is just the mask itself,
mm-hmm.
and then it's the people's responsibility that we're sending it to put whatever filter on that they want to, and to put the bands on so it'll fit on their head.
Okay.
Myself personally, I just take a sheet of N95 filter that I just cut out of an N95 filter that you might buy at Home Depot or Lowe's. I cut a circle out. I wrap a rubber band around the edge of the mask, and bang, I've got a completely filtered mask because I have a seal on the side of my face with the mask that's tight enough that nothing can get in from the sides, and then the filter stops anything from coming in the front.
Got it. Now, there's a lot of confusion out there, Dr. Plothy, about, if you wear a mask, it only protects you. It doesn't protect you from other people. So basically, I'm just trying to understand, all the masks that we're wearing now are just protecting us from what? I mean, you know what I'm saying. I mean,
yeah, and absolutely. I think that's a common misconception that people think that the mask is to protect you. I was just at a Parker's up in Pooler a couple of weeks ago, and I asked the ladies behind the counter. I said, "Well, where's your mask?" And she flatly said to me, "Well, I don't need one."
Mm.
And I chafed because it's not about you needing one. It's about protecting everybody else because
right.
so many of us are asymptomatic
mm-hmm.
that we may not think that we have the virus and we may be a carrier of the virus.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to jeopardize anybody else's health
mm-hmm.
any more than I want them to jeopardize my own, which is the reason that I personally always wear a mask when I'm in public.
Mm-hmm.
And as it stands right now, I keep social distance except for coming into the office to do 3D printing
mm-hmm.
and the occasional shopping trip. I still don't really leave my home because I think we're just waiting
right.
for the next
for
wave
the other shoe
to
drop
Jordan.
For the other shoe to
yeah.
drop and it will
it absolutely will.
You know, my son works at Dobbins in HQ and
mm-hmm.
they're doing the numbers for the CDC and Department of Defense, and you know the numbers have spiked again since Georgia opened. You know,
absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
And so unfortunately, these aren't my words. These are, but it's just, it ain't rocket science. There's another wave that's going to come back through. And I would imagine things are going to have to be shut back down again.
Yeah, I think there's a possibility. And I've told colleagues this, and friends that I believe, so as it stands right now, the University System of Georgia, USG, is going to open all campuses this fall. And in fact, Savannah State's going to open in the next couple of weeks
right.
For faculty and staff to return. But I think we're going to start school. We're going to continue with some sort of checks in place and hopefully some contact tracing. And then November, we're going to let everybody go home for Thanksgiving.
Mm.
I don't think we're going to come back from Thanksgiving break. I think we're going to stay off campus.
Wow.
And so mentally, I'm sort of preparing myself for that world. I'm also preparing, you know, for my syllabus to say, if you don't wear a mask, that. But I really think that we are, another shoe is going to drop, and it's probably going to come late June, early July.
Yeah.
It's going to spike back up in September when everybody goes back to school. And then we're going to be in the same position that we are right now because we didn't take the steps beforehand. And what my goal and Professor Silberg's goal is to do as much to mitigate that as we can. So if we don't get any more orders from anybody, or for instance, we sent 75 masks to 75 plus, I think two or three extra in there, to a nursing home in Baxley that had an outbreak of COVID. If we don't get any more orders like that, we have decided amongst ourselves, the Makerspace, that we are going to keep producing masks for our faculty and our students for this fall.
Awesome.
Now, granted, there's 3,000 plus students, probably a couple hundred faculty after that, and we're producing roughly about 10 masks a day.
Mm-hmm.
We just got an order, information that we are allowed to buy another printer. The university provided enough money to do that. And so we are going to buy another printer, so we'll have another one online.
That's awesome, because I was going to ask, how many machines do you have right now?
So we only have three machines.
Okay.
The engineering department has been kind enough to loan one of their machines to us in addition to our two, so we have some prints coming from them, not nearly as many as we're producing here. But the other part of that equation is the filament, the plastic that you use to print these items, costs money as well. They're sort of like Gillette, right? You buy the razor, but the company really makes money on the razor blades, right? And so companies like MakerBot and Airwolf and Dynamicism, they, and Form Printers, the various printing companies that are out there, they don't make the money just on the printer itself, which cost usually around $3,000. That's what a good printer that you can use in your office will count. Some of the industrial ones are $11,000, $12,000, $15,000, and then they go up from there to where I've seen printers that cost $100,000.
So how many, I don't mean to cut you off, Dr. Plothy, but
yeah.
I'm really curious about how many additional machines do you need? And then, you know, I raise a question. You talk about the plastic. I mean, you know, I'm playing devil's advocate here. Has it been tested?
I mean,
has it been tested? Could it cause rashes?
PLA. PLA is the material is called PLA, and PLA is safe for common everyday use. It's not food safe, meaning I can't make a spoon out of it and eat with the spoon. That's not advised. But in terms of durability, it's a very tough material. It melts at about 215 degrees, so that we can mold it into the shape that we want. And basically the extruder, which is the little printing needle inside the printer, lays ink row after ink row, just like an old dot matrix printer, right? And that's how you build up the items.
And so how long does that take to make one mask?
To make one mask, 3 to 4 hours.
3 to 4 hours.
So, 3 to 4 hours.
That's amazing.
If we want to make, so I have friends that say, oh, well, you can just pack a lot of prints in there and you'll be able to do, 12 prints in 4 hours. But no, that's not the way printing works, because you're printing each individual item at the same time. You're then multiplying past that 3 to 4 hours. So for us to print 4 masks on one plate, the printing plate, like a canvas, if you want to think of it that way, on one canvas, we can print 4 on one of the machines. Wow. That takes 12 to 14 hours based on, you know, whether something gets stuck, and sometimes the PLA gets stuck in the inside, whether there's a power outage, whether there's a jam,
right.
Those kind of things happen. So on average, we're averaging between 13 and 16 hours on both machines to print out 6 and 4 masks at a time. And yeah, go ahead.
No. Keep going. This is so exciting. So keep going.
Yeah. So for us to be where we want to be, mm-hmm. my vision, and we've written a proposal for the university to have 10 machines.
Okay.
And so if we have 10 machines all producing 4 to 6 masks per, we can make 1,000 masks in a relatively short time.
So who would man those machines? Would it be students? Would it be staff? How would that work?
Eventually, we hope to have a practicum course for faculty and students.
Okay.
That they can learn how to run the machines, and we will have lab assistants that we have taught how to remove and change the filaments and do sort of simple maintenance on the machines. Anything beyond that, that's where Professor Soberg and I walk in, and we have to take care of those issues. But unfortunately, I haven't been able to use any of my GMC classes in here yet because we only have 2 machines.
Oh,
so I can't bring a class of 25 students in and say, hey, we're going to do printing today, when I've only got 2 machines for 25 students or 16 students. So
Let me ask you, Dr. Pelosi, how do you gauge success with these masks? Is there a way to gauge it? How do we know if the masks are actually serving a purpose?
Yeah, so are they being used? And so some people have sent emails and said, thank you for getting us a mask. We really appreciate it. We passed them out this morning. Those kind of emails,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't got any pictures back yet from people wearing the masks, but I know through the Fired by Corona group that other people are wearing the masks, and I can see pictures because it's a wide community group on Facebook at this point.
Oh, good.
That people are uploading their pictures of them using them and wearing the masks.
Okay.
I personally wear the mask every day, and sometimes when I'm out and about, people say, oh, where did you get the mask? And I say, oh, I made it. Here's a give me your email, and I will send you the form for you to get the mask.
Now, are there masks for children? Now, I've seen, I'm a mom, but my kids are grown. But I know the challenge of one trying to get a hat on a toddler or trying to put a bottle in their mouth or anything over their face. And I was at a grocery store a few weeks ago, and there was this young father who had a little toddler, I'd say maybe, 14 months old, 15 months old. Dad was trying to put the little mask over the little angel's face, and she just wasn't having it. And I just told Dad, I said, you know what? You're gonna have to pick and choose your battles. You're just gonna have to let this one go. This is not gonna work. And he did, do these masks come in child sizes, little kid
size?
Yes,
we make a size. We make 2 sizes. One's a large male.
Mm-hmm.
And one is a smaller, we just basically print the large mask at 90%,
mm-hmm.
and we found that fits most women. As far as toddlers, no, we would have to receive a separate request. Somebody would have to say, and then I would have to resize the mask. We have not received that yet, because most of the people that we're sending these masks to are agencies or clinics,
mm-hmm.
and so they're using them for their nurses and their staff. In order for them to be safe. So we've sent them to, as I mentioned, Baxley. We've sent a huge bunch to Wisconsin, another clinic in Louisiana.
I'm so proud of you guys. Look at that. You guys are just spanning the U.S. globe. I'm so proud of you guys, Dr.
Yeah.
Murphy.
Well, thank you. We would like to send them more locally, but we just haven't had the response yet. So that's one of the reasons why I think being interviewed on your show is important, so that we can get the word out to say, hey, we've got these masks. We are willing to send them to you for free, for free, F-R-E-E.
Right.
Has
Candler Hospital reached out to you at all?
So Candler, so permission to speak freely. So some of the hospital systems, because these aren't FDA certified, are not willing to use the masks.
I see.
The problem is a lot of these institutions, like for instance, Savannah State Police, are depending on their employees to come up with their PPE.
Wow.
And so these employees are wearing, you know, whatever cloth mask they have, or maybe a painter's mask that isn't an N95, but it looks kind of like a mask. Or maybe they're doing the surgical masks, which don't have the seals mm-hmm. on each side to protect you from COVID. So what we're suggesting is, yeah, but give them something better than a cloth mask to use.
Right.
And we have it free and available. So, again, a lot of that falls back on liability, that those places, those institutions are afraid of being sued later mm-hmm. by saying, hey, we gave you a mask. You still got sick. Please don't sue us.
And see, and that's a lot to think about. Hold that thought. We're going to take a station identification break, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere, Dr. Plothy.
Okay.
Okay, listeners, and we're back. Thank you for joining WRUU 107.5, LP Savannah, Georgia, WRUU.org, The Art of Health and Wellness with Evie Williamson. My guest today is Professor Theo Plothy of Savannah State University. We are discussing the use and the production of 3D printing PPE equipment, better known as a mask. And so, welcome back, Dr. Plothy. Thank you for everything. I have a question. What is the status of the N95 mask shortage, if you even know?
Yeah, so the problem is that a lot of the masks that that we had in reserve have gone bad. They don't meet the qualifications that we'd expect of an N95 mask. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that we have limited the amount of production our facilities here in the United States have made. And so we've been trying to get a lot of masks from China. There's the famous instance of the owner of the New England Patriots sending a plane specifically to China, picking up masks and then hiding it because the federal government has been sort of gobbling up those masks for their own purpose and then not providing a federal response for supplying those masks to individual states. They basically said, hey, states, it's up to you to find it. And so the states are all competing amongst themselves. And so if you or I tries to go to a store and get an N95 mask, we're probably going to be rather unsuccessful because most of those resources have already been bought out for the states for first responders. And the truth is that as medical professionals, an N95 isn't really going to do anything for them.
Mm-hmm.
For most people in that enclosed environment, they need an N99 because the coronavirus is actually smaller. But for those of us that are just out and about in our daily life, we don't need a medical grade mask to begin with. We just need something to cover ourselves that keeps out the coronavirus droplets that can spread as much as 14 feet in normal conversation. So when you're talking to somebody without a mask, their spittle, so to speak, and the droplets in their breath can spread 14 feet. And depending on the filtration system in a building, it can spread even farther around a room depending on how that airflow is.
Okay, so I'm not a doctor, Dr. Pelosi, but you know, we have our eyes, we got the ears, we got the nose. Can't those droplets get into, you know, our ears or eyes?
Yeah, what we found is that generally COVID transmission is through the nose and mouth.
Got it.
I'm sure there's a possibility that, let's say, somebody sneezed directly into your eyes, that could happen. But generally, your eyes will close. Your body has an automatic response to droplets or spray going into the eye,
okay,
right? So generally, we found that people get sick when they're around other people that are sick and they're not wearing masks. So for you and I, all we need is a generally social distance and a good N95 mask. I know there's been some various reports, and people often repeat Dr. Fauci's recommendation in early March that we don't need a mask. But the thing about coronavirus is that it changes. It's evolved. It's literally
mutating. Yeah,
it's a mutating. Yeah, it's an evolved flu virus.
Mm-hmm.
So we're discovering new things, like there's that skin condition that is leading to the death in children. There's, you know, we said at first that a sore throat really wasn't a sign of it. An upset stomach's not really a sign of it. But we now know that having a sore throat could be a sign of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
What we do know is that masks prevent infection. They're not 100% because nothing is 100%.
Right.
But when I wear a mask, it not only protects me from your droplets, but then more importantly, if I am asymptomatic and I have had COVID or I have COVID at the moment, it's going to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
And so for most people, they don't have access to a medical grade N99 mask anyways. And the truth is they don't necessarily need it. So what we've decided to do is by producing the mask, we're trying to make that bridge that gap between wearing a scarf and wearing an N99. And so does a medical professional that's in a COVID ward need our mask? No, not at all. But the person who's working the desk, who's checking patients in, they do. They need something better than just a cloth mask or a scarf.
Let me ask you, what do you think about, I mean, it just really concerns me, all of these businesses opening up, this being a tourist town. We have little viruses coming from all four corners of the earth to Savannah.
Yeah.
To our beaches. You know, I drove through downtown about an hour or so ago. I didn't see a mask anywhere in sight. You know, and it's like, stay out of our town, you know, stay away. And I that's not very good for business, but you know, we may have to bite this one and take some losses financially. I know that's easier said than done, especially with American greed and corporate greed. How do you think that this is going to, let's fast forward, I don't know, just your opinion, just your assessment, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to fast forward next summer, this time next year, 2021.
Yeah. Hopefully by then, we'll have a vaccine. Mm-hmm. I think people are fooling themselves to think we're going to have a vaccine by the end of the year.
Right.
I think that's a fool's errand. And there are those in our culture and society that believe that there is a magic bullet. And really, even a vaccine isn't a magic bullet.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to come up with therapeutics that help.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to be social distancing, and we should be social distancing for the next 2 years.
Right.
I legitimately think that through the end of this year and through probably most of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And what I guess culturally what this has revealed to me is inherently how selfish we as Americans are.
Mm-hmm.
As much as we tout how much we like to help each other and how much we support each other, at the end of the day, people just can't be bothered wearing a mask.
Yeah.
Because they don't see it personalized to them, because they're so self-centered in their own worldview that, oh, that's other people.
Mm-hmm.
I personally know someone who has died from COVID. One of my friend's father-in-laws died, got sick, and died within 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
It was that quick. And he was in his late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a bit older, but nobody should be dying at 67 from COVID.
Right, exactly.
Nobody should be dying in
2020.
In 2020, nobody should be dying at 67. It just, that's not old anymore.
Right.
Back in 1972, if you were 67, that's a different.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at Pat Morita in Karate Kid.
Yeah.
And he was like in his mid 50s. He was like 54 when he made that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, you're like, oh my God, that guy's so old. Oh, he fought in the Korean War. He fought that World War II. Oh my gosh. But 54 today is nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, Daniel Craig, James Bond is in his 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Idris Elba is in his 50s.
Hey, I'm part of that club too.
You didn't 50. Have to out yourself like
no,
that.
No, I am proud of my age. I am proud. I'm a fabulous 56-year-old, healthy female. Woohoo! Yeah, and I think a lot of it. Like I had a conversation with Dr. MJ Collier of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Last week he was a guest on the show, and a lot has to do with what we eat. We are digging our own graves with our teeth, people. We got to stay away from the sugar and the pasta, you know, all the stuff I love, all the stuff we love, you know, the bread and all the butter. And it's just we have to pick up a fork and eat more colorful, raw foods.
Yeah. And not to get off on a dietary and tell people what they're eating is wrong necessarily, but I think as much of that it's a distance from food, right? We don't really know where our food comes from. It's so processed. And in a very real sense, that's where we're going. That ignorance is what we're going through with COVID. People don't understand, and it's not personalized to them to say, I'm not going to go without a mask because I might have it, not be ill from it, and not make anybody else sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen reports from people who lived through the Spanish flu,
mm-hmm.
Which I hate saying that because it sounds bad. It's no different than the administration calling it the Wuhan virus. It's a political rhetoric thing. But for lack of a better term, the Spanish influenza outbreak in the early 1900s, that there has to be a recognition that it may not be happening personally to me, but it's happening to somebody. And in the Spanish flu, it happened. Everybody knew somebody who died.
Wow.
And I hate this. I don't want to get to that point.
Right.
I don't want to get to where people are like me. Everyone is like me and knows somebody who died from COVID. I have a cousin who's 84 and she is currently got COVID. She's in a nursing facility, back in my home state of Indiana. And so I worry about her. I worry about my mother, who's aged as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about you, people. It's about us.
Right.
And that's one thing the COVID pandemic has revealed, is that as Americans, we kind of suck in that regard.
Yeah.
We have this inherent selfishness, which pushes us forward, strives us to innovate, strives us to do better. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's the whole sort of climbing up the corporate ladder, step on people on the way up.
Every man for himself and God for us all, you know,
exactly.
Mentality. I got mine, so I'm good. And, you know, that's a show for – that's a topic for another show, but we all know where we are with all that right now.
Yeah, so I think – just to return to that point, I think that we are going to – there's going to have to be a monumental cultural societal change. And I'm praying and hoping that it doesn't require the death of 300,000 Americans.
Me too.
I think by the end of this, whenever that might be, next spring, next fall, next summer, whatever, I don't think it's going to be over anytime soon. I fully expect that over 300,000 Americans will die. I really don't want that to happen.
I don't either, but Dr. Plothy. Listeners, we are having a fabulous conversation with Dr. Theo Plothy, Professor Savannah State University, talking about 3D printing and PPE equipment. He is one of the spearheaders, if you might want to call it, of this project, with Professor Silberg, Chair of the Department of Fine Arts and Humanities and Wellness, and a local Georgia dentist. And we are just so thankful that, you know, we have someone like you on the front line that's coming up with this, that's moving it forward, who's taking the lead. Dr. Plothy, how can someone reach out and contact you guys?
Yeah, that's fantastic. And let me add one more short thing, is that at the end of the day, there are talkers and there are walkers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a walker. I don't just talk about getting something done. Mm-hmm. There was a need mm-hmm. that needed to be filled, and Professor Silberg and I got together and said, we are going to do something about it, because we're both walkers.
Mm-hmm.
And so on March 17th, right when the whole closing the country was coming down and we went on spring break, that was my first day in the lab to start printing masks.
Mm.
And I started on March 17th, and we've been printing masks every day since, and then turning around and donating them to people who need them. And what's been happening is I've been having to do the legwork in order to call a facility and say, hey, would you like us to send you some masks?
Mm-hmm.
And what I would like, on the other hand, is that for people to then contact me and ask me so that I don't have to run around and do it. But I did that because people need the masks. And so I'm willing to contact agencies and clinics and say, hey, we have these masks. We're willing to donate them.
Okay.
But if somebody wants them, they just need to email me. And my email is Plothet, Plothet, Papa Lima Oscar, Tango Hotel Echo Tango, at SavannahState.edu. All they have to do is email me. I will then email them a donor agreement form, which they have to sign. They tell us how many masks they want. And as we spoke about, the liability indemnifies the university from any responsibility of what happens after we send you the mask. Because we're going to send you the shell. It's your job to put a filter on it and put mm-hmm. a seal on it and put the bands on it so you can wear it. We can't get into that. Just legally, we can't. That's not something we can do. But we can get you the basic mask. And then it's up to you to filter and seal it. And then you've got a mask that you can wear on a permanent daily basis. Just wash it, clean it, ready to go. Just email me and
give us that email again, Dr. Plothy.
Yeah, it's Plothet, Plothet, at SavannahState.edu.
That's wonderful.
And
that's
I will get
wonderful.
Back with you as quickly as possible.
Okay, so all you businesses out there, or healthcare facilities, mm-hmm. or personal care facilities, or schools, or what have you, get in touch with Dr. Plothy regarding your masks. Just want to take this time to say WRUULP Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Sounding Community Radio with Global Soul. You are listening to Evie Williamson, The Art of Health and Wellness. And I'm just thankful, Dr. Plothy, that you took time out of your busy schedule to sit with us and chat with us regarding these masks. Now, Dr. Plothy, in closing, tell me something I don't know about this project. Tell me something I don't know or need to know.
One thing that we need that I haven't spoken with is if you're out there and you want people to be safe, we're also in need of material. And we will actively take PLA filament or monies towards that in order for us to keep producing. Because at this point, we've got the machines going. We just often run out of material.
Okay.
And then I have to find some way that I can source that. And, the university budget is sort of closed for the year. So even if somebody doesn't need a mask or doesn't want one of our masks, if you're willing to help us produce the masks, we will gladly accept your help. We just need a big reel of material costs anywhere from $28 to $45.
Okay, businesses, you hear that? You hear that request? So if you have the materials to help mass produce these masks, or a 3D machine, or just a checkbook where you can write a nice, healthy check towards this life-saving project, you know how to get in contact with Dr. Plothy. Dr. Plothy, I want to thank you again for being a guest on our show. And I definitely want to have you back again because this is so interesting. I'd like to see, a few months down the road, how this project has evolved, the demand, the need, where we are. Okay?
Absolutely. And whatever you want to mask, just let us know.
I know where
and
to find we'll, you.
I know where to find me.
Yep, I know exactly where to find you. Again, I want to thank you all for joining in with the Art of Health and Wellness with Evie Williamson and Dr. Theo Plothy with Savannah State University. Everybody, please stay well. Please practice your social distancing and wear your mask. Thank you. Have a good one.